the president's new executive order on immigration that he signed this morning has a 90-day pause on countries from Syria, or folks from Syria, Libya, Yemen, Somalia, Iran, and Sudan, and a 120-day pause on refugees from around the world. Of course, those are some of the differences from the president's first executive order on immigration that we discussed that ran into considerable legal trouble. Today, however, Attorney General Jeff Sessions defended both that original order and the president's new revised rules that he signed today.
The Department of Justice believes that this executive order, just as the first executive order, is a lawful and proper exercise of presidential authority.
Well, joining us now is Susan Church. She's chair of the New England chapter of the American Immigration Lawyers Association and one of the attorneys who won a temporary restraining order against Trump's first immigration order in January, just 34 hours after it was issued. She joins us now. Welcome back to the show, Susan Church.
Thank you so much.
So what do you think is the legality of the new executive order?
Well, you know, I think what's important to realize is in the almost universal condemnation of the original order by almost every federal judge who looked at it, the opinion was clear that it was intended as a ban against Muslims. And you can't rewrite the order and pretend that your intent or your purpose was different in writing the original order. So I think he's very vulnerable just on looks like a Muslim ban, acts like a Muslim ban, talks like a Muslim ban. It's probably still a Muslim ban, no matter how much you rewrite it with the help of some more educated lawyers.
Well, let me jump in here, though, because probably isn't necessarily, is that a legal standard? Because the new executive order goes through considerable detail, I think, to write out, to specify a bunch of different exemptions. As Shannon Dooling told us just a little bit earlier, it removes the language about persecuted religious minorities. So does that not satisfy the criteria or questions that you just reminded us were raised by the federal courts?
So one of the points in evaluating whether or not something is constitutional or not in excluding entire classes of people from certain countries is whether what is the intent. And I don't think the intent has changed. They may have spelled out different waivers and they may have exempted current visa holders and current lawful permanent residents, which certainly puts you at, you know, a disadvantage in arguing on due process grounds, right? Like if you don't already have the visa, it's harder to challenge the denial of the visa on due process grounds or the universal revocation of them like they did originally. But I think the intent is not any different. And they've put a lot of fancy language in there, but the intent is still there and the intent is still problematic for this administration.
So I'm just help me understand here. I take your point about intent, but if I'm sitting on, if I'm a judge in a federal court, wouldn't one of my natural for this particular executive order follow-up questions be, well, then, you know, if that's truly the intent, the administration, however, hasn't singled out every Muslim majority country. It's just these six, many of whom are on the United States federal list of state-sponsored of states that sponsor terrorism.
Right. But you know what's interesting is in the attempt to justify this particular new Muslim ban, the administration points to two particular sets of terrorism acts. One is terrorism by two Iraqi nationals. Well, we now know that Iraq is removed from the ban. And the other is an alleged act of terrorism by a United States citizen who came to the country as a child. So they're so desperate to justify this that a judge will be able to look at that and see through it and suggest that maybe the purported reason for this Muslim ban is not really what is intended. More importantly, if you look at Section 5, implementing uniform screening, and you go through the types of uniform screening, like in-person interviews, they already exist for all of the people from all these countries, usually multiple interviews. A database of identity documents already exists. The National Visa Center keeps digitized databases of all identity documents. I mean, everything that's listed in Section 5, which is the enhanced screening and vetting, already exist under the Immigration and Nationality Act, and it has been occurring for many, many years. These countries have all been on President Obama's list since 2006. So a judge would be able to look at, okay, you're saying you have to do this for the security of the country, yet you're not doing anything new or distinct that would suggest you really are protecting the country.
Well, to that point, I want to play a little bit of tape from Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, who spoke this morning following the president signing this new executive order. He spoke about vetting, and here's what he said.
While no system can be made completely infallible, the American people can have high confidence We are identifying ways to improve the vetting process and thus keep terrorists from entering our country.
Based on what you said a little earlier, Susan Church, it sounds like, are you saying that there's no need for further improvement?
What I'm saying is anything that they've suggested they intend to do in this order and in their oral statements already exist. So I don't think that there is anything need to do, considering there's no substantial evidence of any death-related terrorism attacks by anyone from any of these countries. So it kind of suggests to me we aren't looking at the right issues. We should be looking at intelligence gathering. We should be looking at the FBI's undercover operations. That, I think, even by all the security experts that filed an affidavit in the Ninth Circuit case, agree, this is the last thing we need to do in order to make the country more secure, and that, in fact, it's making the country less secure by feeding the recruitment narrative, by saying to people who are potential to be radicalized, hey, look how much we hate Muslims in the United States. You see what we're doing to them? And that's what the security experts agree. I suggest that this administration listen to the experts, the bipartisan panel of experts, and put the money in those areas so that our country can be safer, not this, which is actually making our country less safe.
Point taken, but it also seems like these are points of policy that you're making, not necessarily law or constitutionality. I'm wondering if the fact that the administration went to the trouble of revising its executive orders on immigration, ironically, does that make you actually feel a little more than a little successful for the wave of legal action that that came in January to the first set of orders?
You know, yeah. I mean, I'm happy that there was a response to our litigation. I'm happy that that despite all of Donald Trump's tweets about how the judges were illegitimate, that they actually listened to the concerns and the constitutionality issues with the first ban. And I'm particularly happy that lawful permanent residents and visa holders, people who are married to U.S. citizens, people who are children of U.S. citizens, people who are doctors, lawyers, scientists in this country, will be protected. You know, let's give credit where credit's due. But it doesn't change the initial reason why this all started and the ineffectiveness of this particular order and the one before it.
Well, so last question. Within hours of the president signing that January 27th executive order or immigration set of rules, obviously you knew that you were going to challenge it in court, and you did. I'm not hearing that same immediacy of knowing exactly what you and other lawyers might be doing this time around. Does that mean that you wonder whether this executive order will stand, will withstand legal challenge?
I mean, we always will wonder that, but this is different in the sense that they've given us until March 16th, so we don't have the chaos created by the other order. We don't have the people stuck overseas who are supposed to be doing research on a tuberculosis study, and it's intended to return. We don't have MIT students who were supposed to be in classes learning about whatever area of expertise they have stuck in their home country. So we should have some order rather than the chaos that we had last time. But, you know, we will see.
Well, Susan Church is the chair of the New England chapter of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. Many thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.